Welcome to the Dynasty Leadership Podcast, a show designed for small to medium-sized business owners across the U.S. In these podcasts, we'll help you leap past the complications that come with a growing business. From sales management to acquisitions, you'll learn how to quickly grow your company of 50 employees or more, outsmart your competition, and avoid common mistakes that can break a growing business. And now, here's your host, Todd Eberhardt.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Dynasty Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, Todd Eberhardt. You know, today we're going to get a chance to talk about family business. And more importantly, because in my own experience, just the number of businesses I've worked with throughout the years, I would say like 93% from what I've experienced have some amount of family in the business, especially when you're dealing with small to medium sized business. Not your billion-dollar corporations, but the ones that mom and dad started. And if you've ever heard the horror stories, which start out so great as dad loving all three kids so much that they each get identical shares when he passes on, that even though one of them carries the weight and does all the work, the other two get cushy jobs and a free ride and probably couldn't even find their way to the office. There's all kinds of stories like that. The good news is there's a much better way to handle that. In fact, there's multitudes of better ways to handle it. And to be able to help get our arms around this topic is a gentleman named Steve Goodman, who heads up SHG Planning. He is a CPA and MBA. He spent time with KPMG and JP Morgan. And he's been running SHG Planning for the last 30 years, specifically dealing with business transition. We're going to focus in on a couple of different areas, but family business comes up time and time again, so we'll spend some time on that. He's also an investor in entrepreneurial businesses and has a book out called Business Succession Planning. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Todd. Great to be here.
Now, you may pick up on my Midwestern Minnesota accent. You may also pick up on Steve's New York, Long Island accent. But fun fact that he shared with me prior to getting started, Steve's got a favorite team. What is your favorite football team, Steve?
I'm embarrassed to say the Minnesota Vikings.
Now, why are you embarrassed to say? They had a great run in the 70s.
Yeah, that's the problem. I'm still waiting for that first Super Bowl victory. Hopefully in my lifetime that will happen.
You are in good company. There are a lot of faithful out there as well. I'm a Packer fan by trade, so we have both a natural rivalry and a kindred spirit with our Central League. Beyond that, let's talk business for a little bit. I gave you a short intro. Give us a little history. How do you get into this kind of business? What is it that you really focus on these days?
Well, I started out at KPMG as a CPA, then worked for JP Morgan in their private bank. Always was an avid reader and very interested in all aspects of financial planning. When I got into my business 30 plus years ago, started to do a lot of work with family businesses and just found that they were so interesting to deal with because they're so complicated. There's, besides financial and tax issues, family, emotional issues. And I found it so challenging and interesting. And every time I met another family, there was something unique and different about their situation. I mean, by now, 30 years later, I've probably pretty much seen almost everything. So it's hard to find such unique things anymore. But just found it so challenging in trying to help people in this area. And pretty much have focused most of my attention in this space.
Fantastic. Okay. When we were talking before we hit record, you came across, so there's kind of these three areas that come up when you're dealing with, and let's just dial in on internal sale, right? Because there's a whole different direction you can take if you want to take it out to the public. But for an internal sale, you gave me kind of three fact patterns, and I'll give you the beginning of it, but I really want your color on it. So you talked about, you know, it's, you know, the family business entity of it. You talked about the idea of partners. And then you talked about the idea of no kids, no partners. Family business for sure is the one that we're talking about. Give me a couple examples of some things that you've come across that start to make it interesting. What are typical examples of a family business when they're going to pass it on?
Okay. I mean, the typical profiles probably, you know, generally dad, although certainly there are moms as well that could be running the business, is probably in his, I don't know, roughly mid-60s to early 70s, has one, two, three kids. Some could be in the business, some could be not in the business, which we'll get into what, you know, some of the problems that arise in these different scenarios. And, you know, the kids are now at an age, they're, many of them are married, they have children and families, and they've made a commitment, one or more, to be in the business. And, you know, dad and mom sometimes want to take some time off, and the kids are kind of running it when mom and dad aren't there. But dad or mom are still involved. They just may not be there every day. So that's usually like the profile of when this kind of kicks in. But every situation is different because, you know, there are some people who really want to hold on, and thus that day of reckoning can get pushed back a good 10, 15 years from that time frame. And then there are others that, you know, are more involved in trying to do the passing down as early as possible.
So you had said, you mentioned problems, and you talked about things that you spot early in the conversation, right? There's certain things that you've seen come up time and time again. What do those look like? What are the problems that you typically find in these family businesses? What do you ask them?
All right. So before I get specific into like situations, let me talk about some general things that I feel are part of the reason why family businesses many times do not have the proper succession.
Okay.
Number one, the founder of the business, this is like another child to them. And a lot of times, you know, they don't want to let go. Like this.
You're saying
is,
the business is like another child?
Yeah, the business is like another child. You know, that
is it their favorite child by chance?
Sometimes it is, unfortunately, but hopefully not in most cases. But it's a child and it's important to them. And sometimes letting go is a difficult thing to do. Almost like when your kids leave home and it's hard when they go to college and to that separation, it's a similar type of thing. The truth of the matter is that the founder spends a lot more time in their business than they spend with their family. Certainly, you know, when the kids are younger. So that's one issue. The second issue is, and I understand this as both a business owner, even though my children are not in my business, but also as a parent, is that, you know, it's so important to try to maintain great relationships with your children as time goes on in life. You know, they get married, they have spouses, you hopefully can get along with them, they have children, you want to get along, you know, obviously you want to have a great relationship with your grandchildren. So what I find is a lot of times it's avoided these decisions because the parent doesn't know how to deal with it. So I'll give an example. You know, let's say you have a business and you have three kids in your business. I mean, you have three kids, one is in your business. And let's just say, which we'll get into this in a minute, why you give it to one versus two versus three. But let's just say dad has made a decision that, you know, he's spoken to friends, advisors, and he's going to pass the business to the one child who's in the business and try to figure out how to treat the other children. Well, when does dad address that with all the children, you know, or because mom may be thinking if it's dad whose business it is, you know, I love my kids the same. Maybe we should give them all the business. And dad's saying, well, no, I got to give it to the one who's in the business. So Think about that conversation. You know, you've spent your whole life as a parent from the time your kids were babies, when they're telling you like, well, you got me a green lollipop. You know, the brother wants a lollipop and I got a bike and the other one wants a bike and a cell phone and a car as they go, as they age.
Sure.
So now you're going to sit down and you're going to have a conversation with your three kids and you're going to tell them that, you know, I'm only giving the business to one that's involved in the business. And the other two kids, let's just say, this isn't always the case, but let's just say the other two kids feel, you know, let's live in the real world here. You know, my father or mom built this business. You know, my brother or sister decided to come into business. And although I respect my brother and sister and they're working hard, most of the value in this business came about because of my parents. And now my brother or sister are going to get all of those benefits, the income, the value of that business, if they ever sell the business. And mom and dad probably don't have enough other income and assets to give to the other siblings to make it fair in their minds. So
in whose mind? In the kids' mind or in the parents' mind?
Well, certainly in the kids' minds who are not getting the business.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And what ends up happening is dad, let's say, is sitting there saying, I have a son and a daughter that's not in this business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have the greatest relationship with my daughter-in-law. You know, we get along, but it's not great.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid that if I have this conversation with my son and he tells my daughter-in-law and they're very unhappy with what I'm doing, it could jeopardize my relationship with my son and potentially with my grandchildren. So a lot of times dad and mom are afraid to address these issues. They almost would rather not say anything. And then unfortunately, when they're no longer here, everybody finds out about these things. And it's because mom and dad, one or both of them, were just afraid to address this for the reasons I just mentioned.
Sure. Yeah. I hadn't thought about, hey, I don't want to have my grandkids held hostage against me just because I didn't give them an equal share of the business. But I suppose that could happen. You know, they do that. But now you got one kid that is active in the business. You got two outside the business. You got 90% of what the parents are worth tied up in the business. What do you do?
Yeah, no, it's and one thing, Todd, that I've learned in the 30 years I've been doing this, my job is not to tell people what to do. My job is to hear them, listen to them, tell them what choices there is for them to pick between, tell them the pluses and minuses, and then when they finally choose one, just remind them of the pluses and minuses. But look, they're business people, they're smart, yeah, and they're successful, and they have to ultimately make the decision. You know, I'll give an example. I don't do seminars as frequently as I used to, but I did a seminar back, I don't know, 15 years ago. And it was a seminar where you sat around at the table afterwards and you had dinner. And normally the table's very private, like they're four couples, they don't know each other. And like, they'll like pull me to the side and say, Steve, here's my card, you know, give me a call and set up an appointment, but they don't want to speak about their situation. But these four couples were like very lively and they got friendly with each other. So I sat down and the first one comes up to me and says, Steve, I know the answer to this problem. You sell the business. You sell it, you get the money, you give it to all your kids, and this way nobody fights. And then the second one goes, you're out of your mind. You spend all these years building up this business. I give it to all my kids equally. They're all my kids. And basically, I started the business and they're going to have to deal with each other and that's life. And I give it to all of them. And then the third one says, you're out of your mind. I would never do that. I'm going to just leave the business just to my kid who's in the business. And the other kids, I'm going to try to figure out something to do for them. And then the last one said, that's crazy. What I did is I'm leaving it to all my kids, but I'm setting up some voting control for my kid who's the major one running, who's in the business, running the business, to give them protections since they're the one in the business. And then all four of them looked at me and they said, who's right?
It sounds like they could all be right and all be wrong for the right situation. Huh?
It's exactly it. And I said to them, you know something? None of you are right and none of you are wrong. You may all be right for your own situations, but you probably don't understand all the other options and maybe what else you could have done. And maybe if you were able to see the bigger picture, you may come to a conclusion that's different than the one you have today.
Sure.
But certainly I have to hear that from you and certainly take that into account in giving an answer as to the best way to do something.
Okay, that makes sense. And I took you off track a little bit. I know you'd started with these several things about the founder seeing the business as another child, the decision avoidance. Are there some other general things that you think about in advance of this?
Well, as I said, some of the other reasons planning doesn't get done is because parents many times feel that if I do nothing, when I die, the only thing I could be blamed for is having done nothing. If I actually do something and it's obvious that there was a real thought out plan, then my children could just like be so mad at me for actually coming to that conclusion and never talking about it with them and finding out about it when I die, when I die as the founder, that ends up hurting the relationships amongst the children because they're so pissed off at what dad or mom did and they never talked about it. So that's like a, another reason why a lot of times planning isn't done, because it goes back to what I said earlier. Parent doesn't want to make these decisions, doesn't want to address these, so they just do nothing. And when they die, everybody's going to have to deal with the consequences, which normally will mean everything's left equally to all the kids, and thus they're all going to fight about everything because it's not really planned out.
So in your experience, you know, making no decision is still a decision, right?
That's correct.
What effect does that end up having on the business? Because we're talking about it in terms of the family, you know, 5-6 people maybe in that group. But a lot of times they have 50, 60, 100, 1,000 employees and their families' paychecks at stake here. What have you seen happen to the businesses as a result of, I don't want to deal with this, we're going to just push this off and they can read it at the will? What kind of things happen to a business?
Well, I think that's a great point. And again, as I said, that to the founder, the business is like a child. You know, some of their employees are very important to them. You know, a lot of these employees could have worked there for their whole lives and almost be like quasi family members. And you are going to hurt those people if you don't do any kind of planning. Because if you don't do planning, two things are probably going to end up happening. A, depending upon the size of the business, there could be significant tax consequences, estate tax consequences, maybe certain income tax consequences when you die, that there may not be the money there to pay those obligations and could lead to the downfall of the business. And even if either the business is not large enough to have those taxes or there's been money through insurance or other vehicles to pay the taxes, if the business is left to all the kids without any planning, the odds of those kids getting along and keeping the business running in a functional way is very small, especially if stock's been left to kids that aren't involved in the business and are going to want to interject their opinions about how the business is going to be run. So clearly, the combination of taxes and conflict, there is a much, much greater likelihood that that business will end up being sold or liquidated. And thus the employees that were very important to the founders could very well not have a job unless the buyer of the business, you know, decides to keep some of them for a period of time.
Okay. And when the business is really without the same guidance, hand on the wheel, so to speak, the founder or the parents, right, if you will, and it's free fall is probably not the right word, but you definitely don't have the same level of guidance, governance. Is it safe to say they're going to take a hit on the valuation if other people are looking to buy something without a true leader at the helm?
Well, I would say to you that even if there is planning and even if there is, let's say, one or two children that are left the reins and they are prepared to run that business, depending upon how old dad or mom were and how many years the kids have been in the business. I mean, look, if dad dies at 85 years old, and the kids are, you know, 50 and they've been in the business for 20 years, it's very possible the kids have done a better job than dad did at running the business. And they're going to be able to just fly with the business when dad and mom are not there. But if, God forbid, dad or mom pass away early on where the kids have not had the experience in the business and dad was still kind of making most of the main decisions, even if there's been planning as to who's going to get the reins of the business, there's still going to be a hit to the business. I mean, you can't replace the 30 or 40 years that dad or mom or both of them had involved in the business if they die early enough that the kids haven't had a chance to really have the reins.
Good point. I want to come back to a story you were sharing with me, which I'm going to say is a hypothetical scenario just to help set it up. But you were telling me about it before, because it made me think of several clients that I was working with as well. So just to set it up, Steve brought it in as a business owner walks in to see him. And it's a guy in his 50s, 60s of age, right? And the first thing Steve asks him is, what percentage of the business do you own? And he says, zero. So that triggers a whole bunch of other questions. Steve, what starts to happen from there? You got this guy that's looking to do something. He comes to you. He's been running it for a while. He's a zero owner. What do you start asking him that takes him down this path?
All right. Well, obviously, there could be multiple reasons that fact pattern exists. But generally, I kind of know in advance where this is going, but I ask the question. So first question, as you said, Todd, is What percentage of the business do you own? Zero. Who owns the shares in the business? And he says, Mom. And I say, 100%? He goes, yes. So again, I know what happened here already, but I go down the path. So I say, okay. So let's say, Todd, you're the business owner. So I say, Todd, how did that happen? And you respond, well, my dad unfortunately died fairly young. You know, I was like in my late 20s, and dad was like, let's call it late 50s, 60s. And I was already involved in the business, and dad had not done any planning. And when he died, he had a pretty basic will that said, I leave everything to my spouse. So one thing that I've learned from the 30 years of doing this, and again, you know, I don't want to sound chauvinistic, but you know, most of these businesses that are people in their 60s, 70s have been run by men. So there's a difference between a mother, a wife, and a widow. Widows think differently than moms and wives think, especially if the husband was the money person and ran the business and handled the finances. So when a husband dies, their wife, who becomes a widow, gets nervous. You know, I don't have my husband there anymore. You know, he was the breadwinner. He ran this business. And many times they get very, very conservative. So what happened in this case is dad died. There was no planning. Mom was given the business. And mom has continued to hold the business for 20, 30 year period of time. You know, from the time Todd in this case was in his late 20s to now he's in his mid 50s. And then I started to talk to Todd about a bunch of things, some of which he probably knew, but some of which like didn't really hit him. So I said, Todd, give me an idea, like when dad died 25, 30 years ago, like what size business was it? Well, to be honest, you know, it was maybe like it did $5, $10 million in revenue. And I said, where are you today? And he goes, well, we do $50 million of revenue. And I said, you know, Todd, I'm going to pat you on the back because I got to assume that growth is mostly because of you. And he said, for sure. You know, I'm the only sibling in the business. I've pretty much been here for that 25, 30 years. And yes, I took a pretty small family business and grown it into a much larger business. So I said, you know, you do realize, Todd, that when your mom dies, all of the value that you've grown in that business, let's make it simple and say it was a valued at $5, $10 million, and now it's valued at $50 million, that's going to be part of your mom's estate. And when mom dies, we'll get in a minute to who gets the shares. The children or child is going to have to pay estate taxes now on a $50 million business, which could be $20 million in estate taxes, but you're the one who grew the business. So in essence, if you're the one left the business, you're going to owe potentially $20 million of estate taxes on something you actually grew. And like he didn't really think of that. Like, you know, he kind of knew that he didn't own the business, but he didn't really think about, oh my God, like I grew this business and now if I get it, I got to pay for it. But I said, Todd, it gets worse because mom owns the stock outright. Do you have any idea what kind of planning your mom's done? And the answer is generally going to be no. Mom's been very secretive about it. I don't even use the same lawyer as my mom because there's almost like a conflict there. Then I said, Todd, just out of curiosity, out of you and your other brother and your sister, who has the closest relationship with mom? Probably my sister. You know, she sees my mother the most. You know, my mom sees her grandkids, my sister the most. You know, I probably have the worst relationship of the three with mom because there's always some friction that occurs because of the business. You know, mom wants a salary, mom wants income, I want to put it back in the business. So I said, you realize though that mom could leave this business to wherever she wants. Like it could either be left to all three of you equally. She could actually leave it to your brother and sister that are not in the business. Maybe she'll leave it to you, but you have no control over that. So not only do you potentially have tax liability to pay on this business if you're fortunate enough to inherit it, but you don't even know whether you're going to get it. And if you do, you may get it a third, a third, a third, with your two siblings that have nothing to do with the business, and together they're going to control the business. And mom may not be doing the planning to protect you to be in control of the business, especially since her relationship with you may be worse out of the three kids. So you've invested your entire adult life growing a business that you don't even know if you're going to get. And if you get it, you don't even know the headaches you're going to get with it. Now, I will tell you this. There is a large percentage of people that have family businesses that are at the early stages of succession, meaning kid just came in business, dad, mom are in their late 50s, early 60s, kids are in their late 20s, 30s, where there hasn't been succession thought about. It's almost not like they didn't do planning they should have done. It's like, my kid just came into business, you know? And generally, dad isn't going to die, thank God, in their late 50s and early 60s. But there are some that do. I mean, look at the times we're in right now with COVID. You don't think across this country, out of the 127,000 people that have died during COVID, that there's been some 50, 60-year-old men or women that have died that have owned family businesses that have not done planning because of the fact that who thinks this kind of stuff's going to happen? So this scenario I just gave you is not uncommon. And now you couldn't go backwards and say, oh, let's stop dad from dying and do the planning. But there is planning that could have been done if mom was open.
Okay, so what should they be thinking? Even maybe dad passes away, but mom's in charge, or before they both pass away. This sounds like kind of an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure kind of thing. When you talk about $20 million in taxes owed on a business that you're trying to keep moving forward and all kinds of other things, certainly dramatic. But on the front end, there's some other ways they can be thinking about that ahead of time, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So what's a few things to think about ahead of time, just to get people in the sense of, I should be really more driving towards action than hiding my head in the sand or worried about today's thing. What's another couple of things they should be thinking about?
Okay. Well, in the fact pattern we just had, using exactly what I said, where it was a fairly young dad with young children, it's not uncommon. And it's not like it's crazy that somebody didn't do planning, because how does the guy know? The kid just came in the business. I don't know if this kid is the right one to run this business. So it's hard for a parent that early in the process to be doing all this sophisticated planning. So I'm going to give that person a pass, because it's too early to know for sure what to do. So what mom.
Okay. But that makes sense. So my question is, let's say the kid's a 22-year-old startup and he's sweeping floors and you're not going to bequeath the business to him. But something's still going to have to happen with the business. And so you'd have to have some sort of interim plan for the business in your will, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so how does one think about that if the kid's not ready and you know they're not ready? And yeah, you have to adjust your will as they get to be a bigger part or conditions change, but you still got to have something in there.
All right, so I'll give you certain different scenarios. Some are very simplistic and some are much more complicated. Okay. So a simplistic thing is, if you're a business owner and you have a business that makes up the lion's share of your assets, and your spouse, let's say wife, is not capable of running the business, and your children are not teenagers, but even if they're like 20s, 30s, but they haven't been in the business long, they just came in the business, at a minimum, you should make sure that you have adequate life insurance, you have adequate things in place from mom. So it takes a lot of the financial pressure off, because at least you know you've left your spouse money to maintain a lifestyle, so that if the business doesn't function the way it did while you were alive, there's pressure taken off. Even if the business is going to be sold, it gives the spouse the opportunity to take their time to try to get the best offer for the business because you've left them with some level of protection. So that's one thing that's important.
That's good. So she can still pay her mortgage and groceries. You're not going to have to worry about her basic needs. Okay.
And she has more time to sell the business because she isn't desperate to get the money from selling the business if that's the route that you're going to end up going. So that's one of the things. The second thing is many times in wills, there's a disclaimer provision, which means that the person who is entitled to receive something could disclaim it, all right? So they could say, I don't want that asset. So then it kind of goes back into the will and then passes down based on what the will says. So you could potentially have had mom disclaim that asset if there was planning and have some kind of succession done, even if dad didn't take the time to do that planning. So that's a second scenario. Unusual to have that happen, but that's something that could. Another thing is dad could have said, okay, I'm not ready to know for sure what's going to happen with my succession, but I want to protect mom and I want to have something in place. This is where it gets a little bit more complicated. So dad could have potentially given in the beginning, maybe to all the kids, because he didn't know whether they may all come in because he was too young to give the time to see who was going to come in. He could have potentially given a small amount of shares in trust, you know, stock in trust to each of, let's say, three kids in the business, and then had some sort of an agreement in place funded, let's say, with insurance, because you want to have that to give you the protection. You don't have to have insurance, but it makes it easier. And when dad died, the business could have been bought by this trust for the benefit of the three kids, and money could have been paid to mom. And at a time period where the government would almost never look at your estate, because at the first death, because there's an unlimited marital deduction and usually estate taxes are not due until the second death, the government does not look as frequently at transactions at the first death. So you could probably have gotten away with a much more aggressive value for the business at that time. And theoretically, have passed the business to the next generation, given mom either an insurance proceeds or some payout from the business. So mom had money. And now mom wouldn't have owned that stock in that business when I met that kid who was 50 something years old. Now, the complexity that comes out of that is we've kind of taken care of mom. We've done better planning, but because it was so early in the process, how do I know which of my kids are ultimately going to come into this? So if I live long enough, I could modify this plan. But if, God forbid, I die early, then you would have to have very sophisticated trust documents that stipulated things in the documents. Like, you know, the shares don't ultimately go to any of these kids unless they're in the business for a certain period of time. They have to meet certain parameters for those shares to ultimately go to them. So it would have been a very thought out substantive trust document, thinking of all the different scenarios that it could have taken place and how do we deal with those scenarios and what are the tax implications of doing that. So I don't want to get too complicated, you know, in the limited time we have, those are some of the things. But I will tell you, the percentage of 60-year-olds that just have a kid just coming in the business that are thinking to that level of sophistication is very, very minimal. I have more of a problem with the people who are maybe 10 years further into that process where their kids are in or not in, and they have a much clearer vision of where things are going, to also have still not done planning, because now you have a much better idea of the things you could be implementing under that scenario. So is that helpful, Todd?
That is very helpful. That is detailed. So you mentioned trust partway through that, and I won't take us deep because that's almost a whole separate conversation, but what are your thoughts on trust?
I'm not a lawyer, so I don't benefit by telling somebody. I could tell you what I've done in my own planning. There's two negatives to a trust: paying for them and possibly, depending whether they're grant to a trust or not, potentially having to file tax returns every year on them, which you don't if it's a grant to a trust. So that's one negative to cost. The biggest negative to trust are who is the trustee, which I'll get into in a minute because that's so important. But I am a major advocate of trust because trusts do so many things. There's major tax advantages you get by how you set up trust, but there's also, it protects you in the event if you get sued, it protects you in a divorce. Perfect scenario is, you know, Todd, forget whether it's a business or not, you know, you die and you leave assets in trust to your spouse, let's say to your wife. Now, let's say I trust my wife implicitly. We have kids. She would never not protect this money for my kids. But my wife's going to get remarried. I would want her to. I don't want her to spend the rest of her life without companionship. The person knows that she has money. The person says, you know, why don't we buy a house together? Why don't we start a business together? And kind of starts putting some pressure on the spouse to spend money for those things. If a trust is set up, it takes all the pressure off the spouse, because all the spouse has to say to you, Todd, in that scenario is, Todd, look, to be honest with you, my husband was a very sophisticated person. There's nothing that's been left to me outright. Everything is in trust. I'm not even the only trustee. You know, my lawyer or my accountant or bank or kid is a trustee. Nothing could be done with the money in this trust without their permission. My husband did this purposely for both tax reasons and protection in the event of divorces and in lawsuits. So I really can't give you any of this money. It's out of my control. And that is a great thing to leave your spouse or potentially your children with, because they don't have to fight with their spouses over things because they didn't do this. It was protected. So I am a major, major advocate of trust. Some people don't like to control from the grave. They say, you know, when I die, I'm leaving it to my spouse. When she dies, she's leaving it to our kids. They're adults. And if they're gonna screw it up, let them screw it up. I'm not controlling it. I just think if you're going to spend your life building up all this wealth, you know, you don't want it to just go away for reasons like a lawsuit or a divorce. You want to be prudent. So I'm generally a very, very, very big advocate of trust. But the trustee is a key item, because many times you're going to need a trustee that goes, you may want somebody independent of your family, and you may want somebody who will be there for your kids. And a lot of times it's hard to find that trustee who's a contemporary of your kids that you trust enough to be that person. So that usually becomes the biggest stumbling block in doing any kind of trust planning, is who do I pick? Do I end up, even if I pick my accountant or lawyer, they're usually a contemporary of mine. They're not going to be around, okay? Do I pick a bank? Some people don't want to pick a trust company because it's very impersonal. But people say, but that's the perfect trustee because they never go away and this is what they do for a living. So that becomes a very complicated conversation with families. But I am a very, very, very big advocate of trust. For all the lawyers that may be listening, I'm a big advocate of it.
Yeah, I think you just made some new friends. Okay, perfect. There's a few mistakes. In fact, I'm thinking about in your book, Chapter 6, you talk about minority shareholders, and then in parentheses, it says, otherwise known as future plaintiffs, which I love. And so you're getting into that. But in general, what are some of the biggest mistakes you see people make?
And what I'm going to do here is I'm going to focus away, Todd, from children for a minute.
Sure.
Away from, because certainly there are many times there are minority shareholders with kids. One quick point I'll make on that, and then I'll get into your question. One of the mistakes families make is they give shares of stock to their children, and they don't have any agreements in place. So like, let's say I have a business.
What do you mean?
Yeah. Well, so let's say if you and I were partners, 50-50 partners, 95% of the time, we're going to have some kind of buy-sell agreement between us. If I die, we get sick, we want to leave the business. Forget that there's usually major problems with the agreements and they have a lot of issues. Generally, they exist. But if you're my son and I give you shares of stock in the business, a lot of times I'm not thinking like, what do I need an agreement? You're my kid. I gave you shares of stock. But, well, wait a minute. What happens if, God forbid, your son or daughter dies and their will leaves everything to their spouse? All of a sudden, your daughter-in-law, your son-in-law is a shareholder. What happens if your kid gets divorced? There's a possibility, even though it was a gift, that could come into play in a divorce settlement. So one of the big mistakes families make is you should never, ever give shares of stock outright to a child without having some agreement in place. And And if you're not going to have, if you don't want an agreement, then you have to put it in trust. And the trust almost becomes like the agreement. It stipulates so many things in the trust. So it kind of almost becomes like a shareholders agreement, which I think you should have anyway. So that's the mistake I find a lot of times families do. Now Let's go to a minority shareholder that's not related. And it depends on how they got their shares, like did it exist previously before you got in the business? Is it somebody that you gave shares to? Once you have somebody that is a shareholder, no matter how many shares they own, and every state has different rules about this, you have a fiduciary obligation to them with them being a shareholder. You can't just do whatever you want just because they're a minority shareholder. You may be able to make a lot of business decisions, but you're going to be in lawsuits with these shareholders if you totally abuse it. Like you say, okay, great. I'm going to take all the profits out of the business to me as a salary. I'm going to leave nothing in the business to give to the shareholder. Okay. Or I'm just going to make all these decisions about the business that's going to harm that shareholder. You know, I'm not a lawyer, but I will tell you, you're going to be in litigation with that minority shareholder if you're abusive in what you do as a majority shareholder. So many times, if it's a choice, like should I give shares to an employee? Many times I'm much more in favor of things like phantom stock. There's things like phantom stock and stock appreciation rights. We don't have time to get into detail, but it's almost like you're giving them the equivalent of the value of shares or the value of how the shares have appreciated from the time you gave it to them until some date, you know, a death.
I would agree. I think, and most people, to be fair, probably would not. They say they want it because it sounds cool to have stock in a company, but all you really have to do is talk to them about, have you heard of a capital call? It's like we always picture money coming to us, but once in a while, especially in current times, money has to go out.
Very good point.
You have a lot of responsibility. So that makes perfect sense when non-family gets stock.
Be very careful before you give them stock. That would be my point.
Those are awesome mistakes. I think that's super helpful to the cause. As we wrap up, what's a couple of takeaways, a couple of action items that people could do just to kind of get things mentally in the right spot? Now, the first one I'm going to throw in for you because I would say, so we'll have a listing on the website in the show notes for Steve's book, Business Succession Planning, A Guide to Transfers, Sales, Family Harmony, and Minimizing Litigation. So we'll have a link for that. So look for that in the show notes. So that'd be one thing people could take action on. What else could people do to start moving down the right path?
Well, look, yeah, you have to make sure you're having conversations with somebody that does this all the time. Not to pat myself on the back, I'm not the only one that one could speak to on this, but like I have a lot of respect for CPAs and attorneys. I work very closely with the accountants, with my clients, and with their tax and trust and estate lawyers, and they're all very smart and they try to do the right thing. But succession planning and the emotional issues, it's a very unique thing. A lot of times you really need to add somebody to your team. You know, a lot of people are hesitant, and sometimes the accountants and attorneys are hesitant to add anybody because they like that control with the client. Sure. But it's really important to like have somebody above and beyond the accountant and attorney who spends a lot of time doing succession planning and dealing with these issues. It could be somebody who does more like what I do, which gets involved in the planning and the tax issues, and the financial issues and the product issues. And it could also be there are people out there that are more like therapists that just, they're consultants. They're not really going to bring you the strategies, but they're going to get under the hood on a lot of the emotional issues that exist. I happen to be very good at that. Like I could be the quasi accountant, the lawyer, that person. I have a multidisciplinary background, but sometimes you actually want somebody who that's what they do for a living is doing that kind of emotional kind of planning.
Okay, so let me ask you this then, Steve. Let's turn it around. Let's say you're the guy out looking. Give me two or three questions you'd ask someone to know, because I could totally see your CPA or your business attorney saying, yeah, I can do that. I can do that, right? And they're all going to say that to a certain extent. But what? Give me two or three questions you would ask someone to say, are you an expert or are you just serviceable?
I guess two things I would do. One would be maybe a general question, and then one would be a more specific question. The okay. general question would be very direct. Like, what I know what you do. I think I know what you do. How yeah. much of your time is spent dealing with family businesses and not just family, it could be partners, dealing with closely held business owners and working on the succession planning? That would be just a very general question.
Sure.
And the second thing, I would use my specific situation. I would say, here's my fact pattern. Give mm-hmm. me an idea of some of the things you would recommend that I do in my planning. I'm not looking for total free advice. You don't have to tell mm-hmm. me everything, but give me three or four pointers of things that you would recommend somebody with my situation implementing. And hopefully you would be able to judge based on the answers to those questions, plus getting referrals, you know, references sure. and things like that. And you also want that person has to be able to work well with your other people. You're not going to get rid of your accountant and your lawyer, everybody else. Everybody's got to play nice in the sandbox. So that's going to be important also. And your other advisors have to play nice in the sandbox too, so that the best thing is being done for the client.
Okay. Those are great. How much time do you spend doing closely held businesses succession planning? Here's my specific fact pattern. I like that term. Give me three or four pointers. Get some referrals, which always helps if you talk to smart people. But even to them, said, hey, if it wasn't you, who would you recommend? And then that idea of comparative value, right? Talk to several people to be able to have a few different things. Those are great points. Wonderful points. Okay, Steve, let's say they do want to talk to you as we bring this show to a close. What's the best way to get in touch with you?
Okay, well, I'll give you a couple. First off, by being a host on your show, I am going to offer a free PDF copy of my book.
Oh, awesome.
So if you go to stephengoodman.biz, there'll be a downloadable version of my book. So free of charge, nobody has to pay for it. You can also go to my website. I have another website called shgplanning.com. My cell number, which is the easiest way to reach me, is 516-297-7390. And my email, which is sgoodman@shgplanning.com. So those are all ways to reach me. But certainly anybody who this subject is important to certainly would benefit by getting my book. I think there's a wonderful amount of information. And it's been written, Todd, for the business owner. It actually wasn't written for the CPA or the attorney. Not to say that I haven't had many of them read my book and think that it was great, but it's more geared to the business owner for them to really be able to put their hands. A lot of situational stuff we didn't get a chance to go through that they'll find their profile in there.
Awesome. Steve, thanks so much for sharing. Those are some fantastic points on family business and succession planning. Really appreciate you being on the show.
Todd, thank you so much. It was great.
And for our audience out there, thanks for listening in. And thanks, as always, for all the great points and ideas and feedback that you give us to continuously make the show better. Thanks for being on. And look, hey, if you are one of those freshly minted CEOs taking over for a founder and you're looking to be able to drive that business and move it forward, and you're one of those people that considers yourself great at tapping into the expertise of others, then reach out to dynastylc.com. I'd be happy to have the conversation. Everybody, thanks for listening in. We'll talk to you next month.
Thanks for listening to the Dynasty Leadership Podcast. For more information and links to today's topics, simply visit dynastylc.com. And be sure to subscribe in iTunes or Google Play so you'll never miss an episode. Got ideas or suggestions for the show? We'd love to hear from you. Email Todd at todd@dynastylc.com.